welcome in, and thanks for joining us for another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. From Hatch Studio 3A in West Lafayette, I'm farm broadcaster Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today, ready to run down the top news from this past week in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. My colleague C.J. Miller will join me in just moments as we discuss all the news, including Commodity Classic that kicks off this weekend in Denver. We'll be making our way there right after today's show to bring you the latest from one of agriculture's biggest events, including what they'll be tackling from a policy perspective. We'll get plenty from Washington, D.C. on today's show, including what Indiana Farm Bureau members were doing out there last week. And we'll talk about Indiana's premier ag leadership program that's been around for over 40 years now. They were out in D.C. last week as well. The grain markets took a tumble this week. I'll have market analysis on the way, and I'll share this weekend's Indiana farm forecast in just minutes. Let's begin today's show with highly pathogenic avian influenza, or bird flu. It's been the top story, not just here in Indiana, but in Washington, D.C., as your lawmakers and ag leaders work to find solutions to stop the outbreak. With more on this story, here's C.J. Miller.
Lowering egg prices, stopping the spread of bird flu, and protecting poultry producers are all part of a $1 billion plan announced this past week by USDA Secretary Brooke Rollins. The first part of her plan is to spend $500 million on adding additional biosecurity measures for U.S. poultry farms.
How do we lock our poultry barns down? How do we ensure that our egg-laying chickens aren't getting this disease? Mostly, it comes from wild fowl that fly over or get into the barns. So USDA will be producing at no charge an audit to every single egg farmer in this country, and that we will help them secure their barns.
Also, $400 million in financial relief will help U.S. poultry producers impacted by the virus.
So what do we need to do to get regulated? Regulations out of the way to help indemnify these poultry producers to start repopulating much more quickly than we've been doing.
Plus, she says $100 million will be directed toward research for a bird flu vaccine.
Our egg layers and our broilers, our poultry industry does not use vaccinations right now. A lot of the industry believes on the egg laying side that we should, but it isn't a proven vaccine yet. And so I was hesitant in rolling anything out that would require more vaccinations without understanding first exactly would it solve the problem. Mexico vaccinates their egg layers and they still are hit with about 80% even vaccinated with this avian flu. So instead, we're going to put some significant funding into researching how we get to that point.
She also added that USDA may temporarily increase egg imports in order to beef up the supply across the U.S. So far, the biggest commercial poultry farm hit by bird flu in Indiana has been a Rose Acre Farms egg production facility near the town of Cortland in Jackson County. The facility had a positive test of bird flu late last month that led to the depopulation of more than 2.6 million birds. This past week, the CEO of Rose Acre Farms was invited to speak before your lawmakers on Capitol Hill to learn more about the impact of the virus and try and figure out some solutions for stopping the current outbreak.
We have to control this disease. We have to do it with offense, not defense, which in my opinion is what we've done to this point.
And that's Tony Wesner, CEO of Rose Acre Farms, which is headquartered in Seymour. During his testimony before the Senate Ag Committee, he says he's fully in support of starting with the bird flu vaccine in order to fight off the virus.
I'm not sure vaccine is 100% the answer, but I think that if we go down that road and we start there, there'll be people work hard and spend a lot of money to try to come up with answers.
He points to a number of other countries around the world that are already using bird flu vaccines.
And nobody wants to see trade stopped because we start using vaccine. I looked up on the charts. If you look at the chicken last year that left this country, almost 40% of it went to countries that are also vaccinating. So I can't understand why we can't get together with those countries and figure this out so we don't ruin trade. Nobody wants to hurt anybody in the poultry sector or in ag, period.
Wesner also told senators that all options must be considered in order to find the right solution for ending the bird flu outbreak.
I was brought a product to me this week that is not a vaccine, that is a pharmaceutical that is being used in Russia with good results, and it actually cures avian influenza. Is it real? I'm not sure, but we have to look at it, and we have to go down and look at things like that to try to find an answer to this thing. You know, there's people going hungry in this country. and there's people going hungry all over this world. And we have to protect the protein. So USDA and anything that the federal government can do to be supportive of that, that we really come up with an answer that makes sense for avian influenza and makes sense for the American consumer, ultimately.
According to Wessner, during his testimony, Roseacre Farms has lost more than 6 million birds to avian influenza since January 1st of this year, which he says is 25% of their current production. I'm CJ Miller.
Thanks, CJ. We've got much more farm news coming up in just a little while here on Hoosier Ag This Week, but right now it's time to turn our attention to the markets. As much as I almost hate to, I gotta be honest with you folks, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. It was a very rough week. Corn and soybeans both took a big tumble throughout the week. Here to talk about it, Brian Basting of Advanced Trading for Market Analysis. I spoke with him in the middle of the trading day on Friday. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. Maybe I'll be the male version. I'll be a Donnie Downer here. It seems like a confluence of events here. As you and I were talking offline, there are so many things impacting these grain markets right now, none of which are supportive. We haven't found a good headline in the bulls' favor in a while. What do you believe to be the biggest factor impacting these markets as we talk here today?
Well, thanks for having me, Eric. There's a number of factors, as you and I chatted a bit earlier, that I'll share with your listeners that have combined together to really zap this corn market as the month of February winds down. We've got end-of-the-month liquidation here. Some of the speculative funds are no doubt taking some profits from long-ago established positions and putting those in the bank, as it were. And maybe a little bit of liquidation from folks who didn't necessarily get in early but got on late here, and a little bit of liquidation from those folks. Fundamentally, Eric, we're looking at an improvement in the Argentina crop. They got rainfall. They've been hot and dry during the month of January, first part of February, and that had supported the market. But now, as we enter the last days of February, the later planted corn is benefiting from the increased rainfall as that corn pollinates. I'd remind your listeners, Eric, that about 25% of the world's exports come from Argentina from March through June. So really a major factor in the world export market the next 4 months. I think their crop is going to be a bit smaller than what USDA has on paper today, but it's not the catastrophic problem that they had 2 years ago. The other thing, Eric, is that Brazil is getting their corn planted. It's a Safrinha corn that's planted after the soybean harvest, double cropped after the soybean harvest. That had been delayed a bit here earlier this month with some rainfall, but that rain cleared off. They got the soybeans harvested, and quite literally, they pulled the planter behind the combine in Mato Grosso in northern Brazil. And planting has caught up to about average. And so that's important because the dry season in Brazil, where literally the rainfall winds down very quickly, starts about the 1st of May. So they want to get that corn planted here during the month of February to avoid the risk of running into dry season during pollination. A couple other things to add, Eric, is, of course, you've got the tariff issue. I believe that the administration is still looking at imposing those tariffs that they delayed on Canada and Mexico starting next week. We'll see if those come to fruition or not. And the other thing, the last thing, Eric, I'd add is the Outlook Forum from the USDA is occurring as you and I speak here on Friday the 28th. It started on the 27th, and on the 27th, the USDA released a balance sheet for 25-26. Now, this is not a survey-based balance sheet by any means. That's what the USDA is going to do the first 2 weeks of March. But I'd remind your listeners it's still based on economics, and the USDA is forecasting a 3.4 million acre increase in planted corn acreage for this year, up to 94 million, and a carryout just shy of 2 billion bushels. Long story short, all those factors have really pummeled the corn market the last few days.
Again, that's Brian Basting with Advanced Trading. Visit advancedtrading.com. On Friday, May corn down 11.5, 469.5, down 11 on the July, 475.75. Dease corn down 6.75, 455. May beans lost 11.5, 1025.75. 12 down on the July, 1040. Novi beans down 12.25, 1029.5. May wheat lost 6.75, 555.75. Livestock, we were lower there too. April live cattle down 347, 192.65, and April lean hogs down 70 cents, 83.67. We'll discuss more on the overall tone of the markets coming up later on here on Hoosier Ag This Week. The Indiana Farm Forecast is next.
It's too good to be kept a secret. The Hoosier Ag Today email newsletter. Every weekday morning, it gives you the latest news that's important to Indiana agriculture, plus a review of the farm markets and a customized weather forecast that's just for Indiana. It's free. It's in your email box every morning. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your employees to sign up for the Hoosier Ag Today email newsletter at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app.
A big temperature shift across Indiana. I'm Eric Pfeiffer with the Indiana Farm Forecast on Hoosier Ag This Week, filling in for Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin. Ryan thought he deserved a vacation. I think that's debatable, but I suppose we can give him one every once in a while. It was 60 across parts of the state on Friday. Here for the weekend, it will be much colder. Saturday, wind coming down from the north, leading us to below average temperatures in the low 30s. And those gusts will keep us feeling chilly with speeds around 25 miles per hour. Sunday, we'll see mostly sunny skies, easing the feel of those mid-30s temperatures. As we kick off the work week, Monday has us warming back up to average temperatures, but storms will be arriving overnight, and then you can expect thunderstorms across Indiana on Tuesday. That warmer and moister southern air will stick around for midweek as we see temperatures return to the 50s. On Thursday, we cool back down again briefly, but then we warm back up for Friday evening, but that also might bring a round of storms. That's the way the forecast is stacking up. I'm Eric Pfeiffer for Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin on Hoosier Ag This Week.
Thank you, Eric. More from Hoosier Ag Today News now as the number of farms that filed for Chapter 12 bankruptcy across the U.S. last year was up 55% compared to 2023. That's according to Farm Bureau. However, one of Indiana's neighbors saw a huge spike in farm bankruptcies.
It's not terribly surprising, but it's always concerning.
And that's Lauren Kuman, lead economist for Michigan Farm Bureau. Here in Indiana, only one farm filed for Chapter 12 bankruptcy in 2024. But in Michigan, they had 12 farms filing for bankruptcy last year. The year before, they had none. Why the spike in farm bankruptcies in the Great Lakes state?
In some areas, we had some tough growing seasons over the past couple of years. We also had challenges in the specialty crop industry, and we have a lot more specialty crops. Michigan has the second most diverse agriculture in the U.S., but those farms have been having a tough time, right? From all the way from import pressures are keeping prices lower, as well as labor costs. Unfortunately, many of the farms, the only way they can find labor is to bring in guest workers from other countries, and they're mandated to pay right around $30 an hour, it works out to, and that's just gotten prohibitively expensive.
Kuman says the overall increase in farm bankruptcies proves why your lawmakers need to get a new farm bill across the finish line for 2025.
We're really looking for something to make sure that that safety net's in place for our farmers.
Check out the full story. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, Commodity Classic kicks off this weekend in Denver. You'll hear more about that straight ahead. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and you're listening to Hoosier Ag This Week.
MicroEssentials S10 from the Mosaic Company delivers uniform nutrient distribution. Every single granule contains nitrogen, phosphorus, and sulfur. MicroEssentials has superior nutrient distribution when compared to MAP or DAP blends. This means your crop does not have to search for those nutrients, improving nutrient uptake. Choose a superior phosphorus fertilizer with MicroEssentials. Contact your local ag retailer to learn more.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. And if you're a farmer or an ag retailer, you may be on your way out to Commodity Classic in Denver. Eric Pfeiffer joins us now as the big ag trade show kicks off on Sunday.
Commodity Classic just keeps getting bigger. The number of exhibitors continues to grow. The number of attendees continues to grow. And it's turned into the premier trade show for the ag industry.
Indiana farmer J.R. Raisner is on the planning committee for this year's Commodity Classic. He's also on the National Corn Growers Association's Corn Board. With all the excitement happening at Classic, some forget that this is an annual policy meeting for organizations like NCGA, where delegates meet to set policy priorities.
We're really pushing hard to get a year-round fix for E15 to kind of get that put to bed and be able to focus on some of our longer term goals within the biofuels industry. Also, you know, definitely a really hot topic right now is trade and some of the things that are going on with the administration and some of the tariffs and other things that, you know, are affecting trade. And we continue to push for fair trade for U.S. farmers.
Year-round E15 nearly became a reality in the continuing resolution Congress passed at the end of 2024, but it was stripped out before passage. Legislation called the Nationwide Consumer and Fuel Retailer Choice Act has been introduced in the House and Senate that would remove an obsolete policy that prevents the sale of E15 during the summer months.
I feel we're in a better position right now to get that passed. We've really had a lot of momentum here. We did a call to action and we had a goal of getting, so many signatures on this call to action and we've far surpassed that.
We'll have reports from Denver and Commodity Classic in the coming days, thanks to the Indiana Corn Marketing Council, the Indiana Soybean Alliance, and Nutrien Ag Solutions. Be sure to follow us on social media as well, at Hoosier Ag Today, on Facebook and X. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
Well, if you've been waiting to see if the corn and soybean markets climb any higher, you may be waiting for quite a while, especially for corn prices.
We're seeing headwinds across the board for the commodities, not every commodity, but many of them.
And that's Arlen Suderman, chief commodities economist at StoneX.
The general thinking in the markets is with the consumer sentiment and consumer confidence both kind of plunging here over the past month with the headlines of tariffs and inflation, that we're going to see economic growth kind of stumble here in the United States as well as globally, and that's going to hurt demand. Keep in mind that we'd had a significant rally in these grain and oil seed markets in recent weeks and months, therefore funds taking some profits on that rally.
How's the overall tone in the corn market?
A combination of factors there really piling on, and now the momentum has turned bearish. The dry areas of Argentina have turned wet to where even flooding is a concern now. The previously wet areas of Brazil that were slowing soybean harvest and therefore planting of safrinha corn dried out. And so we're seeing very fast planting of safrinha corn crop in Brazil. We also saw that the funds had near record large long positions or ownership in Friday's CFTC report, which made the traders nervous.
He adds that we could also see a huge increase in corn acres across the Midwest this growing season, which would also add significant pressure on the corn market. Check out our full conversation with Arlen Suderman. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. As we pivot now from soybean prices to soybean pests. If you're a soybean producer, you know how soybean cyst nematodes can damage your crops and lower your yields. But how much do you really know about these pests? You may think that a soybean cyst nematode is a bug, but according to Dr. Greg Tilka, nematologist at Iowa State University, he says it's actually a microscopic worm.
It's confusing to people perhaps also because it goes into the root and it attaches to the vascular tissue of the soybean root, but then it swells up. The adult female eventually gets so big that she pops out of the root and you can see her as a little white dot. And in fact, that's one way we advise that farmers and agronomists check fields for SCN. Wait till 5 or 6 weeks after planting and then pretty much through to August, maybe mid-August, dig roots and look for those little white females. Even though the nematode's a microscopic worm, you can see the swollen adult females with your naked eye, size of a period at the end of a printed sentence.
He says the reproduction cycle of the nematode can create challenges because they're not monogamous.
But the interesting and problematic part is a male will mate several different females, and a female will be mated by several different males. If a female makes a total of 250 eggs, they might have 200 different genetic types because of the intermating that occurs. So they're not clonal. Clonal would mean that all the eggs are just like the mother's genetics. They are a mix of genetics of all the different males that mated with the female to produce those eggs, and that genetic diversity allows the nematode to adapt.
Which also means the nematode can develop a resistance to certain pesticides, which makes it far more difficult to eliminate them. Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. It's the biggest award that an Indiana ag educator can receive. It's called the Golden Owl Award, and it's handed out by Indiana FFA. They've announced 8 finalists for this year's Golden Owl Award, including Jamie Earnhardt of Central Noble, Chris Kaufman of Westfield, Jeff Miller of Sullivan FFA, also Jana Morgan of North Putnam, Rebecca Peterson of DeKalb, McCord Snyder of East Central, Kenneth Slough with Shackamack, and Jim Wildermuth with North Miami. This year's Golden Owl Award winner will be handed out during the 96th Indiana FFA State Convention at Purdue. That's coming up here in June. And the winner of the Golden Owl Trophy will also receive $3,000 to help fund future educational efforts. Each of the remaining finalists receive an individualized plaque and $500, which isn't too bad at all. Last year's winner, Ron Knoll, he's an ag educator at Prairie Heights High School in LaGrange County. So we'll look forward to seeing this year's big winner coming up in June. Eric Pfeiffer has more of your news coming up here in just a few. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and this is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
It takes all types of capital to build the economy of the future. To truly be innovative, it's expensive, right? Whether it's a drug or a robot or AI as a piece of the infrastructure stack, it's inherently extremely expensive. So it takes risk takers from a capital perspective to kind of make that happen. And so you mentioned it being a difficult task for an investor to kind of weigh all of these things. And I often joke, but I'm serious. And that the first couple of conversations that I have with an entrepreneur is like the most expensive form of capital you could want for yourself is venture capital. Like, I'm going to be the first venture capitalist to tell you that you should try to fund this business any other way possible and then come back to me.
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today, and I didn't get the chance to talk to you much last weekend. And that's because I had just returned from a trip to Washington, D.C., with Class 21 of the Indiana Ag Leadership Program through Agra Institute. I am in Class 21, and this program has been around since 1983. It provides individuals involved in ag and related industries with the opportunity to improve leadership skills and develop the expertise needed to provide leadership in public and private service for their businesses and communities. I'm honored to be part of the program.
Personally, for me, just fantastic program. I think it kind of came at the right time in my life. We're kind of transitioning from my dad in his 70s to kind of the next generation.
And that's my classmate, Doug Mathis. He farms in northern Indiana's St. Joe County. The last two sessions, we've been out in D.C. and at the Indiana State House, focused heavily on policy. Doug says the program is encouraging him to get involved in leadership beyond the farm because decisions are made by the people that show up.
This notion then that, you know, I think we heard there at American Farm Bureau that, you know, a representative has 750,000 people and two-thirds of them live in an urban setting. And I just think that that's an interesting dynamic in that as you're a politician, like, are you going to listen to the two-third or the one-third? But if the one-third is providing a very tangible good that the world needs and wants, probably have to listen to that a little bit more.
Again, I'm honored to be part of the Ag Leadership Program, and I'd recommend it to anyone in Indiana agriculture, but don't just take my word for it.
If you want things to be better, you kind of got to go out and invest in yourself. And that would be the same for your business, right? You want your business to be better. You want your farming operation to be better. You're going to invest in it. And so this has just been a great platform to have a personal investment in me.
If you're interested in learning more about the Ag Leadership Program through Agra Institute, they're going to be hosting networking gatherings around the state throughout the month of March. You can find the list of events at HoosierAgToday.com. And if you're waiting for a personal invitation, here it is. You're invited. Come join us. Now, we weren't the only Hoosiers out in D.C. last week. We ran into folks from Indiana Farm Bureau. They were there weighing in on policy issues critical to the success of agriculture. Indiana Farm Bureau President Randy Crone told me that they had seven individuals on what they call issue advisory committees for American Farm Bureau.
It ranges from energy to farm policy to water and natural resources, and it's issue groups that will dig into the topics a lot deeper, the issues, and understand them and help us develop good policy. And But that will go back to the local level and it'll go through the resolutions process. But it just gives us an opportunity to take several days, dig into it, understand the issues, and it's our grassroots members.
While in D.C., Crone and others met with Indiana Senators Todd Young and Jim Banks to discuss policy issues impacting farmers back home. It's been a little while since Indiana hasn't had representation on the Senate Ag Committee. I asked Crone if that's a concern of his.
I don't know if I'd say concern. We sure would have liked to had Senator Banks on there, and we did work and try to get him there, and it didn't work out. And it has been a long time since we haven't had Hoosier on the Senate Ag Committee. I will say we have two of them on the House Ag Committee, representing Baird and now Mark Messmer representing Messmer. So we're represented there, but we're going to go have conversations, talk about Farm Bill. Labor's one of our top issues, and the H-2A and the labor rates. And so we're going to be talking about some issues like that that impact the pocketbook of Hoosiers.
Crone told Hoosier Ag today they also discussed biofuel tax credits and Senate confirmations with Young and Banks, while adding they'll be out to D.C. plenty more in the weeks and months to come to advocate for Indiana farmers. And finally, on today's show, we've talked a lot about bird flu and the impacts that it has on things like the price of eggs. But in reality, the impacts in our communities are far greater.
It's always interesting to see how a specific farming operation has kind of that ripple effect through a community.
Abby Heidenreich is a Purdue Extension educator and member of the Purdue Farm Stress Team. The Indiana State Board of Animal Health reached out to them to provide mental health support during these difficult times.
Depopulation of birds can take a huge emotional toll on a farmer who cares for those birds day in and day out.
Heidenreich says farmers often tie their personal worth to the farm because, as they say, farming is a way of life, right? But situations like this require a reminder.
You as a farmer are more than your farming operation, that you are valued as a human individual and that your life matters, and that this is something that we can get through.
Heidenreich also reminds farmers that they can call or text 988 for help with farm stress.
Doesn't have to be any kind of serious life endangerment. If you're just having a rough day and you want someone to talk to, please call or text 988. Get some help from a person who can go through that with you, or talk to someone that you love and care about that you trust.
Resources are also available at extension.purdue.edu/farmstress. Thanks for joining us on Hoosier Ag this week. We'll do it again next weekend, and be sure to join us throughout the week from Denver and Commodity Classic. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.